You're listening to Catalina Film Radio on
KISL
88.7
Avalon.
How you doing? This is Ron Trupa with the Catalina Film Society, Catalina Film Festival, and the Catalina Film Radio Show. I'm on the phone today with Kenyon Prince. He not only has a history with the Catalina Film Festival dating way back to our beginning year of 2011, but he's also the writer, director, and producer of a new film called Hard Sun that we're going to talk about. But right now, I just want to introduce you to the man himself, Kenyon Prince. How are you?
Good, man. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm excited about your new film. But before I talk about it, I want to find out more about Kenyon Prince and all the listeners out there that don't know much about the good work that you've done in the past on all different types of media, whether it was online with web series and short films and all the way up till now your new feature, as well as you as an actor. So and this is a question I ask everybody that comes on the show, how did you start? What was the impetus of what made you get into this business?
You know, I always wanted to be in this business from, an early age. I think as early back as I can date it is about 7 years old. I grew up on movies and, my parents really were supportive of the arts and stuff like that. And as a kid, acting was kind of the thing I latched myself onto because, that's the thing that's the most apparent, I think, when you watch a movie is the people you see on screen. So I did that for, a lot of years, and that eventually brought me out to was doing that pretty steadily until the writer's strike I guess it was 2008. And at that point, all the studios kind of shut down except for reality stuff. The last show that I booked was right at the beginning of the strike. I did the very final episode of The Riches on FX. And then me and all my actor buddies were out of work, and so we kind of started talking about, maybe doing a web series because Joss Whedon had just done, Dr. Horrible and all that, and the Guild was gaining steam. And so we wrote a show called The Romantic Foible to Esteban, and that was the first like professional thing that I directed.
Before you get too much into that, like what were the films as a kid that inspired you? Like when you would watch them with your parents, like which ones? They would say, what are your favorite films? What do you kind of mimic your career after or were influenced by?
I've always loved every kind of film. I walked out of a movie, and I can't fall asleep to movies, so if I if I start a movie, even if it's late at night, I have to finish it. as a kid, I was definitely a kid of the 80s, so all of Spielberg's early work and Star Wars. I grew up on Star Wars. Wizard of Oz was a big one, when I was a kid.
Yeah. Were you scared of the monkeys like everybody else?
Yeah, the monkeys were terrifying. And I remember I was not able to watch the very beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark or the very end as a kid. So I only saw like the middle of it until much later.
Yeah. So it's safe to say a lot of adventure, action, thriller sort of films too.
Yeah.
Right? Like fantasy.
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I've always been a huge fan of fantasy. I haven't directed one yet because those are really big budgets. I was a huge, fan of The Lord of the Rings when they came out. And I think Peter Jackson is doing amazing stuff.
And you never went to school for it, or you did?
I did not. No, I actually was going to school for theater and then stopped going and worked entertainment in Florida. I was working for Disney and for Universal and, would work during the day and then write feature scripts at night. And looking back, I was kind of directing back then, but was usually just a medium for me to act is I, you know, write a little script, put all my buddies together. I was the only one who knew how to use a camera, so I would, you know, direct everybody and act in it. And so I guess that was the beginning of my directing career way back when.
You're listening to Catalina Film Radio on
KISO
88.7
Avalon.
Yeah, I always think it's fascinating, too, when, you know, most people think that filmmakers go to school to become filmmakers, but I know so many filmmakers that, you know, their education was on set.
Yeah.
And, I think that's kind of how you develop, you know, and maybe not the passion and the love, because I think that's probably what gets you into it, but I think you also learn a lot, you know, absorbing on sets once you really start putting yourself out there.
Yeah, there's definitely, I think, a disconnect between, you know, classroom and actually being on set. You know, that's not to discount film schools. I, you know, work with a lot of people now who are very talented who did go to film school. But yeah, for me, it was actually really nothing I ever thought of doing. And then, you know, I kind of learned it. A lot of it when I first moved to LA, I was PAing a lot. So I was fortunate enough to work on a lot of big shows. I worked on The X-Files, their whole final season here in Los Angeles. I did The Gilmore Girls and American Dreams. And so I was, you know, on set every day, 12, 16 hours, and just kind of watching everybody do their jobs and ingesting all that information.
Now, is that how you start? Did you start in extra work?
When I first moved out here, that's myself and my buddy Jay Flatt. We would do extra work on tons of shows, and then through that, I, you know, established some relationships with some pretty awesome ADs, and then that led to PA work and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think we all go to Central Casting when we first moved to town.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so then. And you were starting to tell this, but I kind of wanted to learn a little bit more about your beginnings. But then how does that get you into the writing and the producing and the directing part of that?
Well, you know, like I was saying, looking back now, I realized that I was always dabbling in writing and dabbling in directing and stuff. It was more back then out of necessity. I don't even think as a young person I knew that those were actually jobs that, you know, you could pick. And so it was always kind of, you know, part of me and my skill set, I guess. And then, so when we decided to do this show, Esteban, it just kind of made sense that I would direct it. I co-wrote it with the co-producer of the show, which was J. Michael Briggs. And then we just, you know, went about it, raised money and shot the film. And we actually hired a lot of kids that were currently in film school to be our crew, you know, our cinematographer and camera ops and all that stuff. And so even then, you know, I didn't know a lot. And so I would just watch these people. So I kind of joke sometimes that I, you know, learned how to direct off other people's college tuitions.
Sure. Yeah. I'm guilty of that as well, sir. Why do you do that shot? Why is the lighting great here? Oh, okay,
yeah, right.
I get it. Full focus, and it, ooh, okay. Yeah. So then was it the sort of personal achievement of doing that kind of sold you on kind of like the future of where you were putting your energy?
Yeah, I think.
In the business?
You know, for me, there's nothing as awesome as being on set and directing. It's just the, you know, the high stress environment. I've always loved film sets, but when you're directing, you know, it kind of, the buck stops at you. It all rests on your shoulders. And I found that it's, you know, I operate at such a high level on set and during production, and then, you know, a project ends and you go back to your regular life and you kind of like sink into this lethargic version of yourself and, you know, wait for the next thing. So it's almost an addiction, I think, to some degree, is, you know, just getting that next fix, getting back on set and, you know, shooting something else.
You're listening to Catalina Film Radio on
KISO
88.7
Avalon.
Now, it's funny, and this is like an ongoing joke I have with my friends. You do this because you love being on set, you love the community of it and everything. How do you cope with the prep work? Because it's interesting, we're social beings that want to be in a social sort of business. But the prep work, do you agree or disagree? It's a lot of lonely, you know, hanging out at a chair at the computer, getting stuff done for weeks and months before you can kind of get to set. Is that kind of a motivating factor, or, you know, is that, do you feel like you get good creative energy in private, or is that your living hell because it's a cave?
Yeah, I mean, for me, I really don't enjoy the pre or post process because it is very, you know, very, not lonely, but it's just, you know, it's just you, and there's nobody to answer to except yourself. So, you know, it's a constant battle to kind of make myself, you know, write a certain amount of pages a day, or, you know, budget a film or schedule, or it's a constant battle. Whereas once you kind of roll into that pre-production phase, you know, maybe a couple weeks or a month out from shooting, that's when you're kind of starting to bring people in and it's becoming real, and you start having an answer to a lot more people because people need answers to questions and things. So it becomes a lot easier at that point, I feel like.
So, what do you do to kind of keep the creative juices alive when you're in that situation?
Something that worked, you know, last month doesn't work now, and so you got to find new things. I'm always watching movies and trying to just spark, you know, my creative juices that way. Also reading a lot. I read a lot of fiction. I find that, it's a theory I have, that the more kind of fictional words and stories that you read and consume, eventually it builds up inside you and you have to let it out. So you have to, you know, write something. Before I wrote the script for Hard Sun, I hadn't written like or read probably about 35 books the previous year. So just all that intake of words, when we finally got around to writing the script, it came really easy.
Hmm. Okay, so then you did a bunch more with, and then I don't want to jump right into Hard Sun yet, because you actually have a lot of work you've done, and not all of it's listed on IMDb because it's kind of the way IMDb. But so what did you attack? Like, so once you said I'm in this fully, both feet in. Where did you attack? Where did you put your energy? Did you just go for a bunch of shorts? Did you go back to the online media where you just say, I want to get into web series? I know you had something to do with Good Night Burbank too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I lived in the web world for a while because it was kind of – web is kind of short films. I feel like, you know, back in the day, people would shoot a short film and then take it to festival and then hopefully, you know, create some hype and a following and then eventually – you know, shoot a feature from that. Web is the same, but, you know, there's a much bigger audience view and stuff like that. So we went from Esteban into, I directed a couple episodes of some other shows, and I was DPing a lot as well at the same time. So I was a cinematographer for a couple shows. But then I developed another show, which is called First Edition, which was a comic book comedy. And so we shot that in 2010. And that show we actually shot as a feature. You know, we broke up all the episodes, but the script was, I think, like 96 pages or something. And we shot, I believe it was a 16-day shooting schedule through a month.
Wow.
So that really helped, because by the time we got to Hard Sun, I felt like, for me, performance-wise, I had kind of already shot a feature when we did First Edition. So I knew that I could handle, you know, the crazy schedules and the long hours and stuff like that. And then from there, Hayden Black brought me on to Goodnight Burbank, and I directed the second half of the season that they had on Hulu, and then that show got bought by HDNet, and all the episodes aired on there as well.
You're listening to Catalina Film Radio on
KISO
88.7
Avalon.
Yeah, it was the first show to ever be bought for HDNet, wasn't it?
Yeah.
First web series?
Yeah, the first half-hour comedy web series that was done.
Okay, so then you get kind of frustrated with the system and how it works, right? And you created your own production company. And
yeah, we
two guys in a film.
Yep. Yeah, James Thomas, who's my producing partner with Two Guys in a Film, we had worked together on a couple things. He had gaffed a music video for me, and then I produced a web pilot for him, and we were kind of vetting each other, I think, at that time, kind of, you know, trying to start a working relationship together. And then the very end of 2011, right after I wrapped Kill Cam with April Wade, James and I went out to dinner and we're talking, and he wanted to do features, and he knew I wanted to do features, and so it was kind of just a conversation of, hey, you know, why don't we just start this company and shoot these two features? And that was the genesis of it. That was like the middle of December of 2011. And then by January 1st, we had the first drafts of both of the films, Hard Sun and Run Like Hell.
And it's kind of a cool collaborative thing. I won't give away too much if any of it's a proprietary sort of business structure that you're trying to protect. But in the essence of the film company, it sort of brings us back to old Hollywood, back sort of in the 1920s, 1930s, where you kind of have a camaraderie. So you're pooling talent with two guys in a film, and you're kind of creating your own little, you know, film environment a la theater.
Yeah, it's, you know, you said the old studio model, and that's very much what it is. And we're starting to see it, you know, again now with, you know, the Apatow crews and stuff like that. But I think, you know, with any type of business, you want to work with people that you like. And so when we started Two Guys and we knew we were doing the films, you know, I just kind of went through my Rolodex of the past, you know, 5 years of working in the web space and stuff, and just invited a lot of people that that I wanted to work with, and we pitched the idea of the movies on, you know, kind of built our base there. We knew that, you know, momentum's one of the most important things, I think, and once it's going, you know, it's really hard to stop that momentum. So that's why we decided to go straight into that second film, and then we also, you know, leveraged a lot of that two film concept with our investors, and that helped us raise money. And then, you know, we used a lot of the same locations, which kind of helped with the budget, and used a lot of the same actors as well. So even though Run Like Hell and Heart of Sun are two completely different movies, there's a ton of the same cast, there's a ton of the same locations and everything.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It really is like theater. It's great.
Yeah.
Now, what do you do? So what's the shoot schedule like? So you have the location. Do you shoot 1 or 2 days worth of scenes from one film and then change genres and change clothes and then shoot the next two scenes? Or you do it all in a day?
No, we I think there was maybe a very brief talk about doing that, but logistically, it became very apparent that that would be a nightmare. So we shot Hard Sun first. We shot it in July, and then we wrapped on a Friday. James took the last week of Hard Sun off to prep Run Like Hell. So we wrapped on a Friday, and then that next Monday we were back on a new movie.
Wow.
Yeah, that's crazy. I acted in both of them. In Hard Sun, I have this big beard and kind of longer hair. And in Run Like Hell, I'm an ex-Marine, so I had to, you know, over that weekend, had to shave, and, you know, shave my head and all this stuff.
There was 2 years in between each of those projects. Kenyon lost 40 pounds.
You're listening to Catalina Film Radio on
KISO
88.7 Avalon.
I couldn't woke up for the for Run Like Hell.
Tell them it was Run Like Hell first and then Hard Sun second, because for some reason the Oscars always come with losing weight, not gaining weight.
Yeah.
Unless you're Raging Bull, but then you take time off. Okay, well then let's get into Hard Sun. Let people know the synopsis in the words of the writer, director, producer.
So Hard Sun is an indie drama. It's about a young woman named Ruth Prost, whose life is put on hold when she has to become the primary caretaker of her brother Riley, who suffers from something called Fragile X syndrome, which is a genetic disorder. It's actually the leading genetic cause of autism. So while people can have autism without having it, lots of times people with this genetic disorder to their X chromosome actually develop autism as well because of that.
Hmm.
Yeah, and so the film's about it's about Ruth and kind of her journey, being stuck in this small desert town and the plans for her life, but then having outside elements thrust upon her and kind of having to put all that stuff on hold and figuring out how to navigate that. And through the process, she meets, this young, handsome man played by Ben Begley. And,
Ben Begley? Who knew?
Yep.
Ben Begley seems to be in everything these days. I see him on television.
Actually,
I see him.
His film, The Hangover Games, is premiering tonight at the Chinese in Hollywood.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I'd worked with Ben on a couple things, and he was always a comedic actor. And then, I think it was April Wade who had the genius idea of casting him in Kill Cam as the villain, even though we had brought him in for one of the other more comedic roles. And he knocked that out of the park. So then in casting for Hard Sun, I brought him in for that. And even then I had to, it was kind of a fight, but I really had to push for him with James, because James just knew Ben as the funny, goofy guy that he is in commercials and sitcoms and stuff. But he's definitely got a dark side and a leading man persona.
So
we were really fortunate to get him, and I think he did an amazing job in the film.
He's great. He had two projects in two of our film festivals. So 2011, I think, was 24 that you brought in with the media market. And then he was also in a film. He's Ed Begley's cousin. So they were hanging out that first year. And then I think the second year he had a project, and he came to see Stan Lee for the Avengers opening.
And I think it was in the Josh Condition that you guys screened, right?
That's right, the Josh Condition.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, but he also had a project in 2012 that I can't remember the name of. I think it was a short film as well. But, Ben gets around.
Yeah, he's always working.
There's always at least one or two submissions in the film festival every year with Ben Begley. It's kind of funny. So not to detract from the film, I apologize, but that's what Ben Begley will do to you.
Yeah, no worries.
So Ben plays the love interest.
Yeah. Yep, he plays a love interest named Josh. He's kind of going through the same thing, he lives in a small town, and his best friend, who's played by me, is a total D-bag, and, just content with, drinking beers and hooking up and, working some crappy job and not really this place in his life where he's kind of questioning, maybe there is more out there, maybe there's life outside of his town and outside of my friends and stuff. So his character and Ruth, who's played by Robin Buck, you know, their characters are kind of going through the same verge upon each other.
You're listening to Catalina Film Radio on
KISO
88.7
Avalon.
And what was, I don't want to give away too much, but what was the overall, I guess, theme that you were looking for when you started creating this? Because you're the story by yourself, and then you and James both wrote it, correct?
Well, myself and J. Michael Briggs wrote the story about...
J. Michael Briggs, I'm sorry.
Yeah, wrote that about 10 years ago. It was a 55-page treatment for like 10 years. We wrote it and then didn't do anything with it. And so when James Thomas approached me, you know, to do a movie, I said, well, you know, I got the script that's, you know, pretty much written. We just got to put dialogue in it. So then I went away and wrote the script myself. And that's what we ended up shooting. I think, nice. You know, looking back now kind of at everything I've written, there's definitely a running theme of, you know, not settling and kind of living for more. And I think that's something that I, you know, try and
live by,
you know, live by as well. So that's definitely the biggest theme is just, you know, life sucks sometimes. And, you know, sometimes you're dealt really, you know, cruddy cards. But it's about not quitting and just kind of taking those cards you're dealt and making the best of them. So that's definitely a big theme. There's also a lot of, I think, codependent themes in the film. You know, with Ruth's character and her codependency with her brother and with her grandfather and stuff like that. And I think a lot of that is just kind of out of personal, you know, experience and things.
You know, in your log line, because I don't want to give away too much, it's always my biggest fear, it says that, you know, she has to choose, you know, which way basically her heart will follow. Do you see those as empowering choices, or do you see those as settling choices?
I think the, you know, it could be either one, depending on, you know, what if that anything that I do worthwhile is something that scares the crap out of me. You know, and it's usually like when I'm faced with decisions or things that I want to quit. When I push through those are usually the biggest accomplishments for me. And I think it's the same thing. We're faced with choices every day, and it's what we do with those. The, you know, one choice is usually easy and kind of keeps you in your comfort and may keep you where you're at. And then there's a more difficult choice, but, you know, down the line, it could lead to a lot greater things.
Yeah. Now, why this story, Kenyon? I mean, you guys came up with this 10 years ago, but, I mean, did you know somebody that was going through this? Did you – why this particular way to tell, you know, the story of human persistence?
You know, I mean, it was so long ago, I'm not even really sure where the exact genesis for the project came from. I knew this, you know, the story was based around Ruth, and we just kind of wanted to stack the deck against her. And at one point we had this idea that she should have, you know, a brother or a sister who had some kind of a disability. And so it was J. Michael who actually found out about Fragile X. He was doing a lot of research on stuff and stumbled upon, you know, this fit what we were looking for. It had a, you know, certain characteristics that we wanted to bring into the film and stuff. And so we ran with that. And then when I wrote the script, we actually were able to get in touch with the Southern California Fragile X Association and go down and meet with them. And they were having a bowling day with all the families you know, the people who suffer from this genetic disorder. So that was invaluable, just being able to be around them and kind of, you know, talk with them and learn from them. And we tried to incorporate a lot of that into the end of the film, into the character of Riley, who's played by John Bain.
You're listening to Catalina Film Radio on
KISO
88.7 Avalon.
You've also submitted it to the film festival, but you know, the performances were solid. I mean, the actors that you, how do you deal with casting? I mean, is this just all part of two guys in a film, keep it in the family, or did you go out to a separate casting director to try to fit roles that maybe you couldn't fill?
Yeah, we had a pretty lengthy casting process. Our casting director, Sax Carr, I had met when we were releasing First Edition. He's a big comic book fan, and so we met him at an event and kind of became friends. And he does a lot of casting and commercials. So we brought him on and started the process. We saw a ton of girls for Ruth. And, saw people for everybody. We kind of got some people from casting, some people from, personal relationships. I had I had worked with Ben before. I had worked with Tammy Carey. She was in Esteban and in First Edition. So even though we saw a lot of roles for her character, eventually, we went with her. John Bain came through, Sax Carr, and then when we started shooting, we still had a couple roles that we hadn't filled. One of them being the grandfather, which was one of the, the big role in the film. And we were out in the desert, I think, shooting or getting ready to. And Robin,
were you looking for like old men out there that could play the grandfather?
No, we had seen some people here. We just didn't find anybody that we really liked. And then Robin studies with a guy named Steve Easton here in Toluca Lake. And so one day, she was like, "Hey, there's a couple older gentlemen in my class that I think might be good for Grandpa." So I went down to the studio after class one day and auditioned them there. And the guy who ended up playing the grandfather, Myron Natwick, we found through that. I actually just had coffee with him the other day and caught up.
That's awesome. And you're like in the middle of shooting, but you're like, "Yeah, I'd love to have coffee. I have all the time in the world right now."
One of the roles is just a brief role, but it's Robin and John's mother in the film. We actually cast her on set through video submissions, and we shot out in Palmdale, so Wi-Fi and stuff was very shoddy. But one of our producers, Samantha Clunan, posted a breakdown and vetted all these videos, and in between shots would come and show me, "Hey, what do you think about this person or this person?" And that's how we found the woman who played the mother.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah,
that's crazy. I mean, yeah, but that's those are the stories.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of, I think that's part of the reason why we're in this crazy business. I think because we like to be on our toes. I think we like the impulsive blood that boils in our veins of kind of the unknowing of what can happen next, but being prepared for the unpreparable.
Absolutely. It's like one big, puzzle. One of the most fun parts about the process is just the constant problem solving and, we just lost the location that we're supposed to shoot at tomorrow. How are we going to, what are we going to do? How are we going to fix that? Or, the actor that we were going to use just got the flu and can't make it. So now where do we find somebody?
Yeah. Filmmaking really makes you, even at the independent level, because even when you're at a small independent level, you don't have any huge stars where you're telling people, "Well, if you give me your location, Brad Pitt's going to show up tomorrow," but
yeah.
even at the independent level, it's amazing how much the human spirit kind of comes together to help you. Even someone that's not a part of the production or the business, but they're like, "Okay, you can use the barn in the back of my house. That's cool." And it's like, "Okay, we got a place. We got a location."
Yeah, for sure. They all, because we do live in LA, they all kind of try to hardball at the beginning until they realize, no, we really don't have any money, you know.
Yeah. There's shoestring budget, and then there's no strings. We have none.
It's crazy.
We cannot even lace our shoes. Yeah. That's funny. Well, Canyon, I look forward to Hard Sun having a successful run. I can't wait for it out there, you know, for everybody to see and kind of see the love and the passion that you pour into it as an artist in the industry and in the film profession that you chose, whether you are smart or crazy for that. thank you. Thank you for talking to us and, you know, everybody in Catalina and the Catalina Film Radio Show, they love hearing about everyone's process because it's so different from the next guy and the next woman. And, you know, I mean, it's just always, it's always a different process. It's always a different journey, but it's all for that same love and passion for the art and at least the good filmmakers. Let's put it that way. It's the passion and the love in the right direction.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you for sharing your story and good luck with Hard Sun and the future productions you have with the two guys in a film.
Well, thank you, man.
Catalina Film Radio on KISO
88.7
Avalon.